On the line is Director of Amnesty International Ireland, Colm O'Gorman. Colm, good afternoon to you.
Hi, Sean. How are you?
You seemed, certainly on Twitter, to seem particularly exercised by Spacey's reaction to this.
Yeah, I think there's various elements of it that are problematic. I mean, first of all, his reaction to what Andrew Rapp had to say. I mean, he first of all, said he was horrified by Andrew's story. And then went on to say that if this happened, it was highly inappropriate drunken behaviour. I mean, alcohol is no excuse for an attempted sexual assault on a 14-year-old child. And then he said that he's very sorry about the feelings that Anthony Rapp said he'd had to carry for so many years. So all of that, you know, first of all, it seemed to be an acknowledgement that the allegation made by Anthony Rapp is credible, because he's saying, yes, this certainly sounds like something that could have happened, but it would have been down to alcohol. But then most worryingly, I suppose, afterwards, he goes on in what I think is just a really appalling and rather disgusting attempt at deflection, and talks about while he's at it, he'll now deal with other aspects of his own private life, and he announces that he's living his life as a gay man, which I just think is the most extraordinary thing to do, just the most obscene attempt at deflection away from what is a really serious allegation of a serious attempted sexual assault on a child by a then 26-year-old man. This happened about 30 years ago.
And disappointingly, it seems to have worked. One or two of the headlines I've seen are Kevin Spacey admits he's gay, rather than Kevin Spacey thinks, yes, I might have attempted to molest a 14-year-old.
Yeah, I mean, Reuters were running. I mean, they were on Twitter, and the headline to their story was that Oscar-winning actor Kevin Spacey comes out as gay. As opposed to Oscar-winning actor Kevin Spacey is accused of attempted sexual assault on a 14-year-old child. It just seems an extraordinary way to approach the story. Very many people online are really upset about the fact of the allegation in of itself, and disturbed by the fact that such an allegation is being made, but also that, as you've referenced earlier on, that this seems to have been something that an awful lot of people knew. This was another one of those commonly known, widely shared secrets, perhaps particularly in the entertainment industry. But then an awful lot of LGBTQ people and others just finding it really, really offensive that he seems to be trying to suggest that this is somehow linked to his sexual orientation, or he's using a big announcement about coming out as gay as an attempt to deflect from it. I mean, as I said earlier on online, it's not, you know, whenever we hear of an adult man sexually assaulting a 14-year-old child who happens to be a girl, we don't immediately go to discussing whether or not that person might be heterosexual. It's absolutely and utterly irrelevant. This is a serious crime perpetrated upon a child. The gender of the child and the sexual orientation of the adult involved is not the point.
There also, this not just applies, it seems, to Spacey, but Weinstein and perhaps many others we're going to be hearing about, both there and perhaps here too, that this repeated culture of silence. Now, this is something that you've experienced firsthand with Father Fortune. Do you have any analysis as to how that can maintain with people? What do people tell themselves that they're just not going to say anything about it?
I think the biggest thing is that people manage to convince themselves that it's not their business or not their problem on one level. But then also people seem to enjoy the salacious kind of grubby gossip elements of knowing but never acknowledging out loud what they might know. I can remember when, you know, back in 2001, I was making a documentary with the BBC about the case that I was involved in called Suing the Pope. And we went back down to the village in Wexford, to Felledonsea, to begin to talk to people down there about what had happened. And I mean, at that point, I didn't know how much it was that people knew. And we were in one particular house where I wanted to get hold of some, or we wanted to get hold of some footage as background footage for the film. And I was talking to the people in the house about what we were doing and why we were there. And clearly they knew my role in it and why we were making this film. And I remember saying to the wife in the house, did people know what was going on? And she said, oh, yeah, everybody knew about it, all right. People used to joke about it. They used to say, don't bend down in front of that fella in the churchyard. But we kept our lads away from there.
Mm.
And it was like, I can remember feeling like I'd been punched in the gut, because I was hearing an adult woman who was an adult at the time, I was 14 years of age, and for 3 years, you know, from 14 to 17, being repeatedly raped and sexually assaulted by this Catholic priest. And now I'm having a woman who was an adult at the time, a responsible pillar of the community at the time, saying, yes, we knew about it and used to joke about it. And our response was to tell jokes, but to keep our lads safe.
Yeah.
And it was just, for me, the most extraordinary thing. So I think there's a mix of things. First of all, people are inclined to convince themselves that it's none of their business because they don't want to be involved. People will do what they need to do, perhaps, to keep their own children or their own loved ones safe. But sometimes it's as simple as, I think, if you were to say it out loud, your humanity would compel you to do something about it, so you keep it quiet. But the silencing and the secrecy that it imposes is just extraordinary. And the culture of the blaming of the victim, even when they speak out, then the blaming of the victim. Again, I can remember back in 2002 doing some local radio, again down in Wexford. And I mean, I'm not saying Wexford is unique in this way. This happens across societies, and not just in Ireland, but across societies generally. I remember one texter or caller, it would have been caller at the time, into the radio station saying, Colin O'Gorman knew what he was doing when he climbed into bed with that priest.
Huh.
And another saying, Colin O'Gorman knows all about sin with a capital S. And this kind of blaming of those of us who finally get to a point where either we can't carry it anymore and we break, or we move to a place where we're rejecting the idea that we have to carry this, and we've moved beyond the shaming and the taking of responsibility for it, and we're now speaking out to try and challenge what's happened. But the immediate response is to find a way to make it the victim's fault, because then we don't have to deal with the reality that we're being confronted with. The people that we know, the people that we respect, the powerful or influential people, or people indeed that we love and that we care for, have committed really appalling crimes against children and indeed against adults, be that sexual harassment, as we've seen reported recently here in Ireland, or the kind of rapes and sexual assaults that we're hearing about in the case of Weinstein and others, and of course, as we heard about in the Catholic Church here as well. And,
yeah.
And that's something that we need to confront. Why do we collude with and act in a way that reinforces or that really strengthens this imposition of secrecy and of silence on victims? That's one of the things that we need to confront, I think.
I suppose this is not to justify it, but people are scared by the opening that. Opening that box and scared of what the outcome would be and what effect it might have on them.
Yeah, and I mean, I think there are various degrees to that. I mean, absolutely, I think that when you're talking about having to confront power and privilege, and if you're not one who shares power and privilege, so if you're less powerful than the person who needs to be confronted, then of course there's the fear of what might happen. And in Ireland, that wasn't an abstract fear, remember.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for a very long time, if you spoke out against power here in Ireland, for some people, it still happens to be the case, you could be subjected to awful abuse. I mean, we've seen what's happened of late in terms of whistleblowers within the Guardian and other spaces here. But there was a time when if you spoke out in Ireland, it would be even worse than that. I mean, at one point in Ireland, to not conform to the demands of society might mean that you would lose your liberty. You would be ostracized within your community. You could be locked up. And at one point, I remember Mary Rafferty saying, not long before she died, she was talking about our history of the incarceration of people in psychiatric institutions. At one point in Ireland, we locked up more people in psychiatric institutions per capita than any other country on the planet, and only the Soviet Union came a distant second to us.
Hmm.
Now, we didn't lock people up because Irish people are more predisposed to be so mentally unwell that they have to be locked up in secure spaces. We locked people up very often because they were uncomfortable. Their truth, their reality, the things they might say, the things they might present, were things that society didn't want to confront. They were inconvenient women, or indeed they were disturbed children who had been sexually abused and were acting out from that space. So to speak out was a very, very dangerous thing at one point for people in Ireland, and it could be dangerous for people who supported people who spoke out.
Yeah. Can I ask you, Colm, about Twitter? Now, you're very active on Twitter, as am I, and on the one hand, it's... It and other forms of social media are fantastic platforms for people to say Me Too and tell their stories. On the darker side of that, there is always a danger, perhaps, that it can turn into a witch hunt, and sometimes people who are completely innocent can get dragged into that.
I think that The whole Me Too hashtag is an important moment because it is. I mean, look, Twitter is just a tool. It's just a space. You know, when I came forward in 1995 and went to the guards and reported what had happened to me, I didn't realize that it happened to so many other people. But as soon as I spoke out about it and the guards started looking at it, within weeks, another 5 men had come forward telling the same story. And as that started to become more and more public, you know, we had over 100 people coming forward to tell the same stories, and it rolled on from there and from there. Now it happens in a much quicker way because it's happening online, it's happening in real time. It's just the tool that it is. But I think there's a number of reasons why people need to be very careful and mindful of themselves and of other people in this. First of all, if you're going to speak out about these experiences, if you've had them yourself, you're really surrendering a lot of privacy. Mm-hmm. And the kind of attention that you'll get at times can be difficult and distressing and intrusive. And you need to be really ready to take care of yourself in that. So I would really urge people, if anybody's listening to this and they're feeling like they need to speak about a personal experience, pick up the phone and phone the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre. Contact an organisation like One in Four. Phone Women's Aid. Reach out and get proper support as you begin to work out what it is that you want to do next, rather than necessarily in a little bit of a reactionary way respond to a hashtag. If it feels important for you to speak publicly, then yes, do that, but get the support first. And then, of course, you know, it's really important to recognize that when we speak out about what are very personal experiences that are unique to each of us, this will have an impact on other people too. It'll have an impact on our families, on our friends, on the people that we love. This will be difficult for them. It'll have an impact on the family and loved ones and friends of the person that we're naming, if indeed we do that, as having perpetrated some kind of abuse on us, and it will have an impact on that person. And, you know, we have to be very careful and remember that, you know, due process is a thing, not just in law. It matters. If we're to address these kinds of difficult, complex issues, it needs to be done in a considered and careful way. The presumption of innocence is important. The making sure that we don't do or say anything that doesn't compromise the ability of the criminal justice system to address, investigate and prosecute, if necessary, these kinds of crimes. That's important. And a mob response never helped anybody. It never delivered justice for a victim, and it never delivered justice more widely than that either. And we do need to avoid that.
Colm, thanks a million for speaking with us today. Colm O'Gorman there, Director of Amnesty International in Ireland. By the way, 1 in 4, you can contact, these are their online addresses, 1in4.ie, rapecrisishelp.ie for the Rape Crisis Centre, or womensaid.ie for Women's Aid.